Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to SMIE Consulting's Midweek Roundup for Wednesday, October 31st, 2018. Today we'll be bringing you three important issues that have crossed the news feeds this last week to talk about how those might be impacting what we do in international education here in the United States. But we're also have a chance today to share some news about what's happening with SMIE Consulting and where you might be able to connect with us at a future event down the road, as well as ways that you can maybe take advantage of some of the content we produce here at SMIE Consulting to help inform what you do in your jobs with international education on your campuses. So again, thank you for joining me today. Today we've got three important topics we'll be covering on international education issues. Those that have been with us for a few weeks on our midweek roundup will know that we have now posted the recordings of these video live chats on our YouTube channel. So you'll be able to check out past editions there, or if you missed this one you prefer to watch on YouTube, you're welcome to do that. We'll also be sharing some news at the end of the roundup today on where else you'll be able to connect with SMIE Consulting in the weeks ahead. So now to get on to today's topics, we have seen a lot over the last 2-3 years. Obviously, politics aside for the moment, and it's hard to avoid in this week before elections. Midterm elections here in the United States. But we'll try and touch on a little bit more constructive topic today on international student enrollment management and how strategic planning can be done and informed by data. As those of you who know, one of my consulting gigs is with Hot Courses, and I've been doing a series recently, just started, called Big Data, Small Data, or Data, whichever you prefer. And I'm looking at three different ways or types of data that institutions can be leveraging to inform their international student enrollment management plans. So last month, I profiled how institutions can use small data from their own campuses and different institutional data sources to help them really take advantage of what is out there to get a sense of student trends, student behaviors, student preferences on their own campuses, and those that they interact with regularly during the academic year and the recruitment cycle. With this month's series with Hot Courses, I've taken the next step in looking at external student behavior data, student survey data. And there's a lot of different sources out there, and I'll be posting the links to the articles I'm referencing in the comments section on the Facebook page for SMIE Consulting. But you'll also be able to catch those on the podcast and other ways to reference this information. For the first article on Big Data, Small Data, how international student surveys can inform international student recruitment decisions, came out this past week on Hot Courses Group and their site for international or U.S. international higher ed resources. And really the focus here was on three kind of main themes on what U.S. institutions need to be doing more of as they search for ways to better connect with their prospective student audiences. And there's a lot of data out there, a lot of surveys that are done. I've referenced a few of them in the article. But what the three main concepts I talk about in the article in terms of kind of baseline concepts that every international student admissions office should take as they approach their prospective student markets is first knowing your audience and what does that mean, knowing what their preferences are, knowing what they are, how they're getting their information, where they're getting their information, how they prefer to communicate with universities, when does information need to be coming from a current student, or when is it more appropriate from an admissions officer or international student or alumni. So there's a lot of great sources of information out there. And one of those that I reference in the survey, in the article, is the IDP. Since 2012, actually, they've been doing an annual student buyer behavior survey. And they examine in particular, knowing your audience, and this is why I focus on this particular survey, is IDP has done the survey to include popular English language destinations in the as they ask students questions. And they've particularly surveyed the students that were looking at five major English language speaking destinations: Canada, US, New Zealand, UK, and Australia. So of those five destinations, they asked students to say what was the best, what was the least in terms of least quality, best quality, or most impactful, that in the issues of affordability, quality of education, safety, post-study work opportunities, as well as visa acceptance. And those were the categories that the students that participated in this survey were asked their opinions of. And what used to be the case, and it still is, thankfully, for U.S. institutions, is that U.S. does still come out on top when it comes to quality of education in terms of how the U.S. is perceived. But sadly, in four out of those five categories, the U.S. is last or dead last. Is last in safety, affordability, welcoming visa requirements, and slightly better in post-study employment opportunities. So there's really a lot of good information here, but I put this in this survey, in this article about survey data to really make the point that knowing your audience is knowing that your audience is also looking at other destination countries, not other just destination institutions within your country. So that Know Your Audience piece is really designed to help get universities thinking about where they are in the marketplace, that it's no longer a vacuum of just students looking at the United States, never has been really, but a greater majority now are considering other options, and that has to impact how you position yourself as an institution, where you're not only talking about your own value as an institution to prospective students, but also the value of the United States as a destination. So that's Know Your Audience. The second main theme of the article is live where your audience lives. And that references really having a presence where your prospective students are spending their time. We all know that online is where this first generation of truly digital natives live. And the question is knowing what online channels they're using, where they and how they are using those in their college search. So the traditional ones of the college search sites are your college websites, university ranking sites, student blogs and forums, and university social media, as well as regular search engines, are all part of the milieu of where students are spending their time in the college search process at that initial stage, the research stage. And that's really where we're focusing here with this article, is are you having a presence or where you can control the content on college websites and obviously student blogs and forums, that you have an institutional social media that you have where you might be able to inform decisions there. Are you, or inform the conversation there? How active is your SEO for international students on your college campus? How are you represented on the different college search sites, where our different institutional profiles are listed? Are you influencing any university rankings, making sure that your institutional data that is used for ranking purposes is accurate on the international front? So lots of different ways of having the content where where your audience lives. And the final piece on this from this article was really one I think is one we often overlook when we're too busy tooting our own horns in terms of what our institution's value is. It's really a matter of listening. Listen. And really to get the attention of prospective international students, the goal really needs for institutions to make your prospective students feel like you understand their needs. And you're probably thinking, how are you doing this how can you do this when you listen to students who don't talk to you first? We all know the situation with stealth applicants over the last decade or so. You're also getting phantom inquiries where you don't really know. There are hundreds and potentially thousands of students that visit your site each year that may never get to the point of inquiry or application. Why do they not? Obviously, there are common things like cost and academic programs that, if you have that information accurately displayed on your website, can allow students to self-select out of your institution where they will no longer consider you. But are you even doing that? Are you putting the kinds of information they seek? And the hot courses student survey data that comes out in the spring each year certainly revealed for 2018 revealed a lot of the kind of content areas where students need to see in order of value, academic programs, scholarships and funding, entry requirements and costs. If you're not covering those four areas on your site and getting that kind of content on your search profiles, on your social media, on your student blogs and forums, if you're not making that information ever present for your prospective audiences, you're not meeting their needs when it comes to that. And listening is more than half of the battle in terms of understanding your prospective student audiences. So, as many of you know who've been in the business a while, that international education has a lot of great resources to help inform your student your international student enrollment management decisions. And one of the things that I always recommend, and I put some of those additional resources in the article for Hot Courses, is things like the Education USA Global Guide, great resource that I had a hand in launching back in 2012 when I was working with Education USA. And there's just great content coming from the advisors and the REACs from around the world who really inform that. Also, the Open Doors, obviously, and DHS's Seavis by the Numbers reports that come out every quarter for Seavis by the Numbers, or even semi-annually now, I think. So that is essential reading material and resource material, as well as the Education USA country fact sheets. These have been around for a few years, but they've really morphed into something fantastic, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of data sources for institutions that are looking to get specific market intelligence. And that's something you ultimately want to get to. Another piece of that puzzle beyond what is provided with the mobility, student mobility country fact sheets that Education USA provides is something that Hot Courses has produced for a number of years called Hot Courses Insights, which gives market level data on what are students most concerned about in different markets in Indonesia, Latin America, Brazil, Middle East, Thailand, Vietnam, Turkey, Russia, Korea, China, India. What are the biggest concerns in those particular markets? So that's real-time data too. And that's something that I think can never be underestimated in terms of keeping your finger on the pulse of what your audience is after. So hopefully that article will provide you with some good resources moving forward to kind of hone what you're doing internationally at your institutions to really better reach your prospective student audiences. So more to come on that series next month with the Open Doors release and obviously Seavis by the Numbers. I'll be covering that more in depth for Hot Courses then. But do take a look at those articles as well as the first one in that series that you can find on the SMIE site as well as the Hot Courses Abroad site. So I want to reference now a second article we're highlighting today, and that's has to do with our neighbors to the north. Anyone who's read in the news since the current administration took office, how much Canada has benefited from what our losses here in the United States in terms of international student interest. Certainly, those have migrated north of the border. And what does that look like? This article from the Globe and Mail in Canada highlights a really interesting phenomenon that's gone on there. Obviously, Canada's been benefiting, but frankly, to be very honest, Canada's international education policy has been in process for a number of years, and having that's they don't they themselves don't have a cohesive government level policy, but they're certainly the provinces in Canada are very much have a plan. Their focus and they're helped obviously by at this time federal government in Canada or national government in Canada that is very much open to the idea of having international students. The article certainly highlights a few of the reasons why that is the case. But what we've seen since the year 2000, more than we've had, there's 4 times as many international students in Canada now as there were in the year 2000, so 18 years. They've increased to over 500,000 international students at present, and they're well on course to continue that run And that's something that's further highlights what I was talking about with the reference to the last article about knowing your audience. Your audience is, your prospective student audiences are considering other destination countries now, and Canada is high up on that list. And of those categories in the IDP survey that I was referencing, Canada came on top in four out of those five categories. So for affordability, for for visa issuance, for post-study work, and for safety. Those are areas where Canada is seen as the top destination now, and they're benefiting from that. And it's not just their institutions are benefiting, it's their society. There are provinces in Canada that are in population decline. And as a result of policies that individual provinces have put in place to become more attractive to international students, making a path to employment and citizenship a formal part of their of how they market themselves to international students, institutions in those provinces are now seeing the results of these policy shifts and seeing significant increases in their student populations from abroad. And you're seeing now there have been rule changes in the government by both conservative and liberal governments in Canada, where now 40% of all economic class immigrants accepted by the federal government are now international students who have graduated and who want to stay in Canada. 40%. That's just a phenomenal number. That 40%, and let's just take that number, 40% of those that are economic class immigrants are students. So I don't know what the overall numbers in that category are, economic class immigrants in Canada, but with nearly half of those being former students or international students who are working in Canada wanting to stay, they see that as a real benefit. And one of the quotes in the article is, it says, international students are well placed to integrate in the Canadian society, Ms. Bezo observed. They're already familiar with Canada. They speak one or both official languages, and they have networks in both Canada and abroad. And the article goes on, plus they're young, payers of taxes rather than consumers of government services. And these seem to be exactly the kinds of immigrants that our country should want too. Obviously there's immigration is a hotly debated topic in the United States right now. Canada takes the approach to see the international students as a net benefit to their countries, for population reasons, for demographic, for economic, and social reasons, that they are bringing revenue to the country, to the institutions while they're students, as well as what they do after they start working legitimately in the United States. Canada is not going to be turning off that faucet anytime soon. The one real challenge here that the article doesn't really address is capacity issues in Canadian institutions. They're already sitting at 15-17% international at their under 100 post-secondary institutions in that country. But whereas in the U.S. we're at 5 and probably falling this year. It's you see, they are very well positioned financially, with their tuition levels are reasonable. The Canadian dollar's at a low right now, doesn't hurt them that competition is shooting themselves in the foot, as the article politely puts it. That we're looking at issues here in the U.S., in the U.K., with what's happened with Brexit and other post-study work rights in England and Australia, which has become even more aggressive on recruiting international students, does have more internationals than Canada does now, but there are some issues of some within the government now that there are maybe putting the kibosh on some potential advances there. So there are some concerns. There are Australian universities that are not going to be increasing their international enrollments because they're already at capacity, and they have several other issues that are going on there. So a lot of challenges moving forward. Canada certainly is well positioned at this point in time to take advantage of those and continue an upward trend, and we'll see what happens with that. So the last topic I want to cover today is one that's obviously a very sad one that we have to be looking at in this day and age, one that has a lot to do with political events around the world that are impacting and having ripple effects beyond just government relationships. And that has to do with the murder of the Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi in Istanbul at the Saudi consulate there. The incredible stories that have popped out have come out of this on how it all happened and the cover-ups and everything else that's been going on here, and the stories that have been changing on the Saudi side, on the Turkish side, really present, I think, obviously, incredible sadness to the, any of those connected with the Khashoggi family. And but the ripple waves are fairly significant as a, in terms of how that might impact what we do in international education. And we've already seen a number of institutions in the United States that have ties to Saudi Arabia. And frankly, there's quite a few institutions in the United States that have ties to Saudi Arabia in just the simple fact that they have hundreds of Saudi Arabian students on their campuses. There, with the Open Doors numbers, Saudi Arabia has been in the top five senders of students to the United States for a number of years, or for at least the last three or four years. And those numbers have, while are decreasing at present because of reductions in the number of scholarships that the Saudi government has had to offer and commit to the United States and other countries, not just the U.S., but they are. There are also a number of Saudi institutions of higher education that have partnerships with U.S. institutions, and those are coming under the microscope. The Chronicle of Higher Ed article that I reference in the comments section of the Facebook page just details a lot of the stories that are going on. There's also been two or three other stories in the news that I've covered in our weekly newsletter, all the SMIE news fit to share. There's stories, University of New Haven, Chronicle story that you see referenced here. There are going to be more stories like this of U.S. institutions, whether it's MIT, who has institution-level engagements with entities in the kingdom. The University of New Haven example has a partnership with King Fahd Security College. This is something that a lot of these kinds of arrangements of institutional partnerships are likely going to come under the microscope institutionally, and rightly so, just to make sure that they're on the up and up. And there's a lot of different levels, obviously. We have a number of institutions that have university programs in Saudi Arabia with the United States are significant. Babson has an important collaboration there with corporations in Saudi Arabia, and you see, in fact, the Mohammed bin Salman College faculty members are trained at Babson, and Mohammed bin Salman is at the center of the controversy regarding the death of Jamal Khashoggi. So that there's a lot of dotted lines and straight lines that are coming under some scrutiny here in the weeks and months to come, particularly after the final reports on what actually happened come out and are revealed, and governments start taking action one way or the other around their ties to Saudi Arabia. It's another one of those things that can really have significant fallout. We saw a couple months ago, we saw comments on Twitter by a Canadian minister about Saudi Arabia's treatment of human rights activists in that country. That led to a pulling of all Saudi students from Canada. So Saudi Arabia saw that as an affront to their country. And Canada did the right thing, as far as I'm concerned. They're standing up for human rights, a position that oftentimes the U.S. would have taken in the past, but that higher ground may have been lost for the immediate future. But the challenge here with Saudi Arabia is obviously the huge number of students in this country and the institutions that have those ties. Obviously, the president talks about defense contracts that exist between Saudi Arabian government and the U.S. companies. So, and what the fallout of any changes to those arrangements. there's a whole interconnected mess of complications that can and probably will continue to trouble this conversation, and rightly so, should trouble higher ed administrators that as they get asked questions about ties that they have to Saudi Arabia in light of this. So who knows if that'll pick up again after the election, but certainly there's a lot out there that could still come back and raise its head to institutions in the United States. So that certainly is covers a lot of what I wanted to share with you today. I wanted to share some news in addition to our SMIE website that we relaunched recently, and that's optimized for mobile as well as desktop and laptop. We also have launched, happy to announce, our new podcast, and that is actually this stream from the Midweek Roundup. We've now had that podcasted on iTunes. So for those of you who want to take this conversation on the road and don't necessarily want to watch the video, you can listen as we discuss the topics of the day on podcast format. So if you like to subscribe to iTunes, you're welcome to check out the links to that on the subscribe section of our SMIE Consulting website. And we'll be dropping that link into the Facebook comments. And that's smieconsulting.org. And from there, you'll be able to find all the resources related to our blog, where we host all the articles that we're writing, as well as the archive of our newsletter, all the SMIE news that's fit to print. And you can subscribe to our newsletter as well on the site. I'm also putting the link to the latest edition, our SMIE Consulting, all the news that's fit to share. That link to this week's edition is in the comments section as well. I appreciate those of you who have joined us this week and in others as we jump into some of these topics, and we look forward to sharing more of this news in the weeks to come, and hope to see you for those of you in the Region 6 area for NAFSA. I'll be seeing you next week in Columbus for the Region 6 Regional Conference. It's from Sunday through Tuesday. So looking forward to catching up with old colleagues there and making some new connections in the days and weeks to come as we talk more about how U.S. institutions can better position themselves to compete internationally in an ever-crowded field. So look forward to catching you there at the Region 6 NAFSA Conference next week in Columbus. Thanks again, and have a great week.